Para mi familia, siempre estoy en mi mejor momento. Por eso también quiero lo mejor en mi cocina. Y eso significa solamente huevos de Eggland Best. Siempre tienen un sabor tan fresco y delicioso, con 6 veces más vitamina D, 10 veces más vitamina E y 25% menos grasas saturadas que los huevos comunes. Entonces, ¿por qué darle menos a tu familia cuando pueden tener lo mejor? Eggland Best. Mejor sabor, mejor nutrición, mejores huevos.
Using my GI Bill taught me I can do anything. And seeing me graduate taught my daughter she can too. VA benefits cover tuition, housing, and supplies. Get what you earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
Hello?
Hi, is this Blake?
This is Blake.
Hey, this is Brianna. How are you?
Hello, Brianna. I'm doing well.
Glad you got a second to chat with me. I was kind of like not really sure. I'm like, you know, okay.
Yeah,
you know,
like when I had, so like when I had that barrel race the other day, like, so we had, and I don't know how familiar you are or where you're located, so you may not even see half the stuff that goes on my stuff, but so like when I had, we had the best, and we called it the best in snow, we had 415 something entries in Hamilton.
Good Lord.
And then that was the week before Christmas, but then, you know, Christmas rolled around, but then, literally on that day of that, on that race on Thursday, we were like, hey, why don't we come back next week and do it again? And then, and so the day that,
I can't imagine what you deal with.
I'm pretty spot on answering because it's my nature, but,
Well, I was thinking to say, I mean, if you run barrel races, you have to be, I mean, barrel racers are a whole nother different breed.
Well, it's an entire different language, and
yes,
even within the barrel racing industry itself, there's a whole other language depending on where you live.
Yeah.
You know, and even in Texas, you know, there's, you know, 4 different states in Texas, and so,
huh?
You know, like Texas, it's really, you know, a whole bunch of states put into one. You know, depending on what part of Texas you're in. You know, the culture is different. The people are different. The energy, the dynamics, everything's different.
So, hold on a second. Where are you at? Like, because I'm in North, I do not know anything. Let me go ahead and preface this. I don't know crap about, like, barrel racing in Texas or anything as far as tight-knit as you guys are over there. Because I'm assuming it probably is a tight-knit circuit, like what you guys run and stuff.
Well, define tight knit. So there's that, but I mean, it's a large group of folks, large community of people. You know, and it's different.
Well, tight knit as in everybody knows everybody. I didn't mean tight knit like small.
Yeah, I mean, technically, it's so big, and you know, just like I said, like, you know, the Houston barrel, you know, the folks that live down in Houston, you know, or even Northeast Texas, you know, the Texarkana area, you know, the Piney Woods, and, you know, and then the West Texas gals, and then the North Texas and the South. I mean, you can go an entire lifetime not knowing, you know, some of those folks and who, you know, who they are. And, but right around here in where I'm at in the Stephenville area, you know, it's a hot spot. You know, it is a prime hotspot, not just for barrel racing, but for the cutting world, for the rodeo world, ropers.
Yeah.
You know, everybody. You know, it's just where folks go, you know. And
are your races that close together, or do you normally do them at the spur of the moment like that, or do you, as far as your series goes? Because you have one series that you pretty much handle, right?
Yeah, I mean, I have an annual race that I do each year, you know. We're going on 4 years on that. I call it the Money and Beaches race. And it's a weird reasons why it's called Money and Beaches, but,
well, hold on. You can't say that and not tell me.
Well, it really is. It's just quite silly. I mean, it's just really silly. To be honest with you, when I first,
well, don't feel bad. Cause I just talked to a girl that sent me a logo that says Panty Raid Race for some jackets. Oops. And I'm like, hold on. You got to tell me what you're talking about.
I mean, we just come up with some weird names for races, you know, like the whole Best in Snow. That was the race that we had at Hamilton on, you know, the Thursday before uh-huh. Christmas. And we're talking a minute ago, Kellyanne McPherson and I, she owns Busy Bee Productions, but she and I were talking about, okay, what are we going to name our April race? And I was like, well, why not just call it the Buckle Bunny? I don't know, because it's, you know, Easter and, you know, da-da-da. But, but the Money and Beaches came out. I mean, that came along when, you know, I had never personally produced a race myself until I did that one on an individual level, you know, level. But I said, what are we going to call this thing? And so I did a little contest on Facebook, and I was like, okay, you know, best guess wins, you know, the best name for the race will win a free entry. And so it's just, you know, why are we going? We're going to win money. And what are we winning money for? Because it's, you know, it's in May, and so we're entering summer, so we want to have beach money, and it's just money and beaches. And so, I mean, it's silly
there you
and
go.
Simple. Silly and simple, and that sometimes that's the best way to go about life. Keep it simple.
You know what? You are absolutely right. Now, is it easier to put on a race of your, you know, the size that you guys put them on? Because around here, a good size race around here is anywhere from probably a couple hundred entries would be considered. Something.
Where's that at?
North Carolina, South Carolina.
Okay. Okay.
Well, Georgia could probably be a lot bigger. Georgia could probably get up to about 400, but a couple hundred is considered a good size race over here.
I mean, I did notice, you know, last year I went to Florida I went several times to Florida to different spots. And I went to, you know, Floribama and then Tampa and then I always noticed that there were a lot of folks there, you know, that were from other states, you know, whether it be Georgia or the, you know, Carolinas or and you know, they a big race to them, you know. I mean, Florida has, you know, quite a few barrel racers though. You know, we had three, I think 300 something each day, and that was big, but a lot of them pulled from other states, you know. And
well,
I mean,
yeah, you're right.
It's not uncommon at all. It is not uncommon. Just like I said, you know, when we had the Thursday night race 2 weeks ago at Hamilton, you know, the Thursday before Christmas, we had 415-ish barrel racers, and they're all, I mean, within 2 hour distance, you know, from there. And so, and that's on
a
week
right
different.
Before
Christmas.
That's a lot different. Like 400 people in that density of that area versus 400 people pulling from four or five different states. I mean, that's what I mean. Like, it is pretty tight knit as far as each race and where it's at over there. Like, you guys.
And I have to do a lot of planning I think the biggest part of the planning process is picking the actual date, the actual calendar date, because, you know, that's really going to be the difference in having 85 entries and 400 entries, you know, a lot of times, you know, regardless of the bells and whistles that you bring to the table for the actual race, you know, whether it be, you know, a whole bunch of added money or no added money at all, really it depends on what else is going on, what else is coming up, things like that, you know.
Well, you got to be able to get along with other producers really well. I mean, you've got to be able to, because I saw, especially in like the heat of COVID online, people were starting to get a little heated about people scheduling on top of people. And I get it, because it's like, you know, you think you're trying to take something from somebody, but you're actually losing yourself and them, you know, because you're forcing people to have to try to pick. And it's like,
and a lot of people, you know, I mean, in, you know, I always like to use the term, like, you know, the saying, like, in good faith, like, in good faith, I will, you know, do the best I can to make sure that I'm not jumping on anyone else's, you know, parade within a 3 hour, you know, when, you know, 3 hour radius or whatever, you know, and do the best I can, you know, but there's always going to be that race or that producer that, you know, doesn't see the right post at the right time when they log on to Facebook or whatever it may be. And so they might, you know, miss something. And so they schedule a race not knowing in good faith that there was something else, you know, so there's always that. But yeah, you're right. I mean, and it takes a lot of work, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, everything, who juggle like continuously, you know, everybody, you know, wants to be just like everybody wants to be a barrel racer, you know, everybody wants to be a producer, you know, not everybody, but you know what I mean? And so it once they do it a few times, they realize that it's a lot more work to juggle than they thought.
Which blows my mind that people don't realize this about anything with life. Cause it's like, mm-hmm. I think social media make kind of finesses thing, all of it, not just barrel racing, but life in general, it'll finesse certain things and people see it. They're like, oh, okay, well I can do that. Then they find out real quick. It's not as
well,
easy
I think
as it looks.
With Car Gurus Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and Car Gurus Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder Car Gurus is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with Car Gurus at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. Car Gurus.
I think it really takes the type of person that, you know, and I'm not really the, I think it, you really got to know who your people are, who help you put on the races, and know whose role is what, you know, and make sure that everybody is in the correct place, you know, whether it be in the office, whether it be behind the mic, or maybe it's in the alley, you know, running the back gates, you know. I am not the right person to be the gate person at a barrel race. I am not that person. I'm just not.
Why?
And,
what is
well,
it?
It can get a little feisty back there, you know. Yeah. And I'm kind of like that. I got that counselor brain where if I have to be ugly, I can be, but it really takes a toll on me emotionally to be ugly to somebody. And I don't like to be that person. So I'm not really good in the office either. You know, I'm really, really good behind the mic though. I mean, I don't mean like professionally, I'm not a professional announcer or nothing, but I mean, I'm, you know, behind the mic is where I believe, you know, belong as far as that goes. And so there's that and making sure that everyone's in their appropriate place, because I mean, dealing with barrel racers, it brings out the best in people and it brings out the absolute worst in people, you know, and it's just like everybody else, you know, whether it be the car in front of you at the red light, or maybe it's the girl in front of you at the grocery store. I mean, it's, or the one behind you in the grocery store needing to get home, you know, and it brings out the worst in you. And it's like, you know, no, if we could just wear a shirt that just says, I'm going through a rough day, or I'm, you know, my wife just left me, or, you know, my kids hate me, or whatever it may be. And then the world just knows, you know, what they're dealing with before they deal with that person. I think that it would be a whole lot better place. And so sometimes, you know, we lose sight of that at a barrel race, you know.
You're absolutely right. Well, that's anything. That's just like with talking to you, you know, because I was like, you know, is this person ignoring me, or should I, like, should I
did
bother
I just
him?
Get ghosted? I mean,
it's always a weird area.
I mean, yeah, I was talking to someone the other day about, we were just me, Kellyanne, and I were talking about sponsorships. It wasn't anything specific, but, she was like, well, you call so-and-so. And I was like, oh man, I don't know. They never picked up. But I was like, oh, well, I'll just call them, because I'm used to rejection. It's fine.
That is the root of it though. You're like, you know what? I'm not getting rejected today. I don't want to deal with that.
no rejection policy on this day. And it's hard. I mean, and that's one of the biggest struggles with actually putting on, you know, an annual race, when, you know, you kind of feel the pressure of society when, you know, like, okay, I can't just put on I can't just have this annual race this year, just be you know, just a regular old, you know, podunk, you know, barrel race, you know, I've got to have things attached to it. I've got to have, you know, this much added money, or I've got to, you know, bring something to the table that's different, you know, and it's that pressure that society doesn't actually put on you, but in your own mind, it does. Yeah. Does that make sense? And so we feel that people put pressure on us when they really don't at all. It's just all in our heads. And so, it's a whole thing. with that.
No, I mean, you're touching on something pretty deep because you are absolutely right. I mean, like, if you kind of iron out certain things that you go through on a daily basis, just like with life, like you're talking about, you know.
Well, in yeah.
We do it to ourselves. We really do. Like some of the things that we, which I think can be a good thing. It can be a good thing because it's to have somebody that actually cares enough.
Yeah, like I have, like with sponsors, that's where I was going with that was, you know, the sponsorships are, you know, I mean, you'll call somebody and most of the time, I mean, and it's no one specific, you know, the larger the entity, you know, the fewer callbacks you might get, you know, big corporations never call the little guy back, you know, rarely do they, a few times they have. But I mean, for the most part, that's always a rejection. It feels like, you know, and then just asking people and then expecting a response back, you know,
it's always scary.
Sometimes not getting that response. Yeah. Sometimes not getting that response back. You know, I mean, I'm kind of, you know, a lot like you and like, I would rather them just say, you know, hey, bro, not going to happen this year.
Yeah.
I am tapped out. Instead of just ignoring, you know, somebody is, but that's what we get a lot of times with the sponsorship, you know, and with the rejection part, you know, but I'm so lucky, like, I really, really do a hard job each year cherry picking. Not necessarily, like, I don't turn down people. That's not what I'm saying. I mean, really cherry picking who I really want, you know, in my heart to be, you know, to go and ask if they'd like to be part of, you know, like, I got a really good sponsor this year, you know, for the race, you know, 4M Equine came on board, you know, with no hesitation. They really want to be part of the industry. And Kylie Scribner is a great human being. She works hard. Great. And
you want it to be kind of what you want it to be a good relationship. That's how I've always looked at it.
Yeah. And you know, another, you know, like Ryan Padone, Arbell Races, you know, Arbell Horses. She's a phenomenal human being, not just a trainer and, you know, horse owner and breeder, but she's just a phenomenal human being, you know, on the human level. And she just wants to make the industry better. And so, you know, folks like her and, you know, Laura Schumann, you know, the owner of, you know, Happy Animals, and she's just wanting to make the industry better. And she's got great products and she's, you know, has great horses. And, you know, Happy Animals is a great, you know, great, you know, product to really endorse. And I'm proud of that. And I've got great sponsors, you know, Dee Dee Jordan, realtor, great sponsor, and Tammy Rokas as well. And I tell you one thing, I talked to a guy last 2 days, well, 2 nights ago, the owner of Provision Probiotics, his name's Joe, and the nicest human being, one of the nicest folks I've ever met, you know. And then another guy I met, you know, the owner of Elite Coatings, you know, they, you know, they coat the floors and of the trailers and the barns and stalls and da da da, you know, for different things. And they were great. And so I've had this past week or two, I've had great people circling around me. It's like the energy around me has just been positive and rewarding. And that sometimes isn't the case, you know. You don't always see that.
We've all seen both sides of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, yes. Oh man.
I mean, it's nice. Like, it's nice to. I don't want to say blow smoke, but because some people are really good. I can hear the genuineness, and when you talk about some people, and I feel that way about certain people I work with. I'm like, you know, I love these people. Like, I will go to war for these people. But we have all also met some people that just, and take grace out of it. Take, okay, here's your first chance. Oh, okay, well, here's your second chance. Oh, okay, well, here's your third, fourth, and fifth. No, you got to stay over there. This is not working. Like,
right. I mean, I think a friend, I had just got off the phone with her right before I called, or right before you called me, Jamie Wilson, she really does a great job of reeling me back in sometimes, you know, in my own, whether it be my faith or my attitude. She reels me back in and grounds me and keeps me grounded. Tammy Rokas does that same thing to me. you know, inform me. But, you know, she's another sponsor, you know, Jamie Wilson and her, Running Rose Performance Horses is a great sponsor. And it's just, I've got these great people that I surround myself with. Yeah. And, but there are people out there that, you know, that really challenge me. They really challenge me a lot because I have to be careful, how I behave, who, you know, what I say, because they don't know me, they don't know my heart, and they don't know how to take me sometimes, you know. And people like me are, you know, the ones that are open and, you know, aren't afraid to share their stories or share their visions or their, you know, who aren't afraid to fail on their face, you know, those kind of people, you know, sometimes we're a little bit, we're taken wrong sometimes. And so there are people that I have to be careful with because they, you know, they've said, you know, nasty words about me and they don't even know me. That's with everything in their life. That's with everything in this world. So,
Have you always, ran barrels? Like, do you actually run barrels too, or do you just put on the event?
Oh yeah. I mean, I've done this my whole life.
Cool.
When I was a kid, you know, we did it all, you know, what else can I say? I've done it my whole life. I've had great horses my whole life. And this past, I guess it was right around my, I'm divorced recently the last few years. And so,
there is life after divorce. Don't feel bad.
Absolutely. There is life after divorce. And so, but I do have a colt, a young horse, not a colt, he's a gilded, but a young horse, a three-year-old, a futurity, or he's four now, a futurity horse that I have with Molly Montgomery, you know, a well-known trainer, real well-known, great trainer, great person. And so that's where I'm going today, to Hamilton, to the Lone Star Shootout. To the fraternity to watch him run tonight and then tomorrow and then Sunday. But I have a horse and he, you know, and I feel like I'm, geez, with the fees today, I feel like I'm paying child support on something that I don't have, don't get to really, you know, have fun with, you know. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
I see it's like getting videos of your kid who lives with mom or something, you know, and they're doing all these great things, you know, and you're like, oh, that's great. Wish I was there, you know, and, but that's kind of how being an owner is for a young horse that's in, you know, going down the road. But yeah, I'm still involved with that, you know, as far as that goes, but not really running as much, obviously, because, you know, she's got my horse and
right.
My other horse went with Mike's wife. So there's that. But,
it happens and I get it.
It happens.
Like, the animals are like, it is kind of like, I watched a thing on TikTok where this girl's pretty popular. Her name's Dimp, and she's hilarious. She's on TikTok, and she did a drop-off. It was a funny video, actually, with her guy friend. They weren't, like, together or nothing like that, and she was doing this drop-off of her cat. And I was like, you know what? If it could be that easy, yeah, it was a cat, and she's, like, got this cactus cat scratch thing and a bag and all kinds of stuff, and I'm like,
well, that's kind of how I feel about my dog right now, because my dog, I got him. He was actually born the day of I signed my divorce papers, like, you know, and so, yeah, and he's 2.5 years old. And so little Jack Russell, he's a little Paris, but he is like, he's my best friend. He's my ride or die. Right. And so other day I was meeting my friend Tammy Seamus. And so I was like, hey, will you just take Bugsy with you and let him have a play date with your dogs? And so she did. And so he's gone. And I'm like, oh, man, this has been the greatest vacation the last day. I don't have to get up and I don't have to, you know, cater to him every minute of the day. And he's her problem for the next day. And so but I'm picking him up at the bear race later on. But
miss him though?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I mean, he's my person, but
I have a little mini Aussie, and I'm the only thing that he knows, and it's really all my fault because he's an asshole and he's crazy, and of course he's already a mini Aussie. But what because it, when they're around you like that, 24/7, you know, they're like, you're the only thing that they know. And so I'm surprised, like, mine would not go off with nobody else. He would probably
he would disarm me. Oh, yeah. I mean, like, Bugsy is, he has gone around the world. He's stayed in every hotel in this world. He has been smuggled into every hotel. You know,
he has been,
he's lived in the truck. He's, you know, he's raised in the truck, you know. And Tammy's wiener dogs have been, you know, they were raised together. And then my other friend, Missy Popper, she's got a big dog, German Shepherd, who they were the same age. And so he stayed time with her. And then, you know, I'd go out of town to, you know, announce a barrel race or something. And then my friend Dee Dee, she would, you know, babysit Bugsy. And so he's got good, you know, he's got a circle of friends, you know, that are, you know, his people and his, you know, but he's used to being thrown around everywhere. You know, he's kind of like the community dog, but he likes to come home. He enjoys his coming home time, though. He knows when, he knows where home is. He goes to work with me, you know. If I leave him, you know, he doesn't like that. He, you know, those little terriers, they wear their heart on their sleeves, and so, you know, you can break their heart real easy. So he goes to work with me. So there's that.
So doing the barrel racing, that's not your full time gig. You do that on the side.
I do it when I feel like it.
Well, ain't nothing wrong with that.
I do it when I have an itch to, like, hey, you know, hey, let's put on a barrel race. Let's, you know,
right.
You know,
okay.
I don't produce barrel races for an income necessarily. You know, I do it, you know, I have to have there's got to be a purpose behind what I, you know, it's like, okay, let's do this. This seems fun. Let's do this. Or, you know, this is a good build up to something bigger or whatever it may be. Or, you know, like in Busy Bee Productions, you know, Kellyanne McPherson, who I talked to you about, you know, I work with her a lot with her own production, which she does well with. And so you know, she's a very busy person, soccer mom, volleyball mom, you know, she works a 9-to-5. And so all these things. And so, you know, I help her with a lot of stuff too. And so I keep myself busy enough to, but no, it's not my career, I guess you could say.
Well, some people do it. I mean, they do it for full time because, and I can see it's a lot.
Really good at it, and they're really good at it. You know, like Jody of, you know, J&J Productions. You know, she's phenomenal at production. She's got it down to a science. You know, and you know, Tammy Kidd with Wild West Promotions, and you know, Go Fast Races, and I mean, there's just some really good productions out there that really bring a lot to the table, and they really you know, really work for the better good of the industry, you know, and they have good races, you know, so there's that. And but yeah, there's some good ones out there.
Because there have been some bad, well, I don't want to say I've had a bad experience, but because I don't actually deal with, I mean, I do a lot of embroidery, we do a lot of awards and stuff. We don't do a lot of awards for barrel people. Just mainly go for the check. It's not really,
sure,
it's not like a pleasure show or a fun show where people get into an award. Barrel races, they want the check, you know, and that's cool. So
they want the money, and they want the money.
Yeah, but no, I mean, it can be a big ordeal, but you know, it's nice to know that some of them are a little more focused on having fun and a good environment versus, you know, some races I've been to and places I've seen, it's nothing but drama, and it's always a problem, and it's always like an issue. So I think it's good that there's some out there that people need to know about that are ran good, and it's good people.
There are some good people out there that really do care. I remember back in the, when I was going through a really, I mean, like just a really, I don't know, emotional roller coaster in my life, you know, and I would go every, I would, I had a really, really stressful job. I was head of all of bioterrorism for all of North Texas in the Dallas region. I ran all the labs. And so anyway, I would come home, and on the weeknights, Tammy Kidd used to have the Wild West Promotions used to have these barrel races in Azle. in an outdoor arena, Azle, Texas. And so I would go there, and it would be the absolute greatest atmosphere, wonderful race. It's just like everything from that day that was meant to break me down, like I got back in my soul that night at her races. It was just a great, you know, yeah. it was just a great time. And so there are those producers that really, yeah, there are those producers that really, really, you know, do their job at, you know, making people happy, you know?
Yeah.
But barrel racing is not something that I want to, you know, do for a career, I guess you could say, as far as productions go, you know. I have what I do for a career that, you know, I've gone to 100 million years of school to do. And so I think that's where I bring a little bit of something with my counseling. That's what I, you know, my perspective sometimes isn't.
So is that what you do for a living, counseling?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Counsel, yeah, young kids in their struggles and trauma therapies and different things like that. And so, you know, I went to school for that, you know, after I'd already changed careers because, you know, I had a whole graduate degree in molecular biology. And so that's where my whole forensics line came from. And so I was a forensic scientist my first part of my life. And then now I'm, you know, on the human element more now. And so I think that human, you know, that that component that I bring is sometimes does not align with a lot of the things that people go through with, like, in the barrel racing. And, you know, I bring more emotion to it. I bring more a different point of view that most people, you know, some people might look at as, kind of raise their eyebrow a little bit at me sometimes, but it's that.
Well, hold on. Why? You mean like, because you probably deal with kids, or you've probably seen situation or heard of you probably deal with people who have dealt with things.
Like I have. Yeah. Like I'm the person who, like, I don't like to be a hypocrite in my own life. And so, right. You know, like I'll tell a kiddo, like, for instance, I'll just tell a kiddo who's going through something, you know, very traumatic, you know, maybe it's, you know, a sexual abuse, or maybe it's just, you know, a dead parent, or whatever it may be, mm-hmm. You know, you gotta allow yourself to feel, okay? And we are taught,
I'm not good at that.
we are taught at a very early age, you know, especially males, you know, to not one, we don't feel in public. Let's not feel in public. And then also let's learn how to behave. What is socially acceptable on how to behave? What is what is acceptable to reveal about yourself versus what's not, you know? And then, but when it comes down to the human element and repairing damage and building yourself back up from a very traumatic experience and, allowing yourself to feel, whether it be the good, bad, or the ugly, you know, that's the first step, you know? And then,
well, I think, don't you think society has kind of maybe evolved a little? Well, I don't know how old you are, but I just turned 40. And I think,
I'm 42.
Well, maybe you can agree with me. Maybe now in the last couple of years, it's becoming more socially acceptable to talk about things like trauma and therapy and stuff. Whereas, you know, when you and I were teens, early 20s and something like that, some of the stuff that people talk about now, you'd never talk about then.
Right. Like, you know, like what I was saying a minute ago, you're actually, you know, absolutely right. Like what I was saying earlier about the, you know, I'm not afraid, you know, to show that side of myself, because if it helps one other person, or if it makes or allows someone else to be less awkward talking about something, then, you know, if I'm the guinea pig, if I'm the person folks laugh at or make fun of or raise eyebrows about because I put myself out there, then so be it. Because, you know, in therapy, it's all helping people. But it's, you know, like I've got friends now. I mean, I've got, and I won't name not one name, but I've got friends I can count on two hands. Literally going through divorces right now. Literally going through a divorce right now, and the world doesn't even know about it. And it's, and a lot of them are barrel racers, you know. And it's, people are so so afraid to put their vulnerable side out there or to let people even know, not even on Facebook, but just in public.
Yeah.
No, hey, this is what I'm going through. I'm going through a rough patch. This is why I was a bitch today. This is why, they don't want no one to know what they're going through, but they also don't know how to deal with it either. And that's why I always say, don't be afraid to feel. You got to feel. If you feel mad, feel mad. If you feel angry, feel angry. If you feel sad, be sad, but don't be afraid to be happy either. And, I think that's what I've hindered myself in doing a lot of times is I'm afraid to be happy, because, being happy means that I've actually evolved. And I mean, heaven forbid we evolve and get better, right?
Hit on something because you're right. No, you are absolutely, I've never actually thought of it in that perspective, but you're right. We actually can being divorced is a perfect example, or maybe going to a barrel race would be another example. If you go and do good, I've actually caught myself wanting to not I shouldn't be excited. I shouldn't be happy about, proud of myself for this. I shouldn't be this way. Or you catch yourself not wanting to express it because you don't want to. My biggest thing is I don't want people to take me wrong. So,
absolutely. And when I was going through my divorce, and I will be very honest, I was the person who thought that, I don't have kids. I met my wife when I was 19, we've been together ever since. And so it's I win. I got all the answers to marriage. I've got all the answers and nothing's ever going to be changed about that, And so I'm like, hey, don't y'all wish, y'all were me, I'm the guy that hasn't got divorced, I'm that guy. And then, so when it finally hit me, that I was going through the thing that I said to the world that I would never go through, then I felt like a failure. And then I would go to the barrel races, but I would find myself recluse from the world. I would sit in my truck waiting for myself, waiting for me to go run. I wouldn't go socialize. I wouldn't do anything. And then I was the person that was afraid to tell anybody that, hey, man, I'm going through divorce. I'm not myself right now, that's why now I'm just like, what I was doing back then? I was afraid to feel anything. I was afraid to talk about life, and life is messy. If you're any good at life, life is messy, because if it's never messy, then you're not really living a whole lot.
That's the damn truth.
I mean, like my friend Tammy said, she said, to win, you can't be afraid to lose. And so that.
Absolutely.
And I mean, I lose at life at least twice a week, in my own head at least, in my own head.
Yeah.
And so, but I'm not afraid to do it. And so I used to.
Well, that'll keep you from doing anything. Because I mean, horses is a perfect example. There's no way you can learn unless you actually try, and in order to try, you have to fail in order to learn. Like, I have never been scared to fail. My biggest thing is probably when I've gotten older. When I was younger, I didn't care, but when I got older, people can be harsh, and I'm less to expose it publicly. I'll look like an idiot by myself behind closed doors.
Join the club. There's a whole club of us.
Yeah. Yeah, but because people me and somebody else was talking about this the other day. I think social media is a grand thing. It's an awesome thing. I'm getting to talk to people that, like yourself, that live in Texas, I probably would have never spoken to before without social media, but it also has a con to it. It has a downside to it. People can say and do whatever they want, whether it's true or not. They can be hurtful. They can be mean, and they can,
right.
I mean, people kill themselves over comments.
They do, and is the one thing right there that has, I've never been afraid to fail. I'm the reverse. I am afraid of what it feels like to be happy and successful. And I get these little burps, these little spurts of success and happiness and da da da. And then I'm like, okay, who's going to bring me back down to where I should be? you know, where I deserve to be, you know, who's going to put me in my place now on Facebook, or who's going to say this mean thing to me that's going to put me, you know, put my soul or my insecurities back in place, you know, who's going to be that person today. And I've gone through that several times in the last few years, you know, with some mean people who have said some mean things that, you know, and I've got that mindset where it's like, guys, Facebook is real. Y'all keep talking about it being fake, but I'm telling you, words really, really do change people's lives. The written word changes lives. If it didn't, we wouldn't read books. And so the written word does change people's mindset. It changes their attitude. It changes everything about them. Just one person, all they have to do is say something so mean and hurtful, and then guess what? They have all these different followers that come in and chime in and bash that person as well, and really, you know, tag team the situation and make it worse. And it's like, oh my God. And if they only knew that it was real, what they were doing to a human being behind the keyboard that existed there, you know?
Oh, trust me, I know. I've been thrown through the mud on the internet twice.
Oh, man.
And
oh, sheesh.
It's like, well, I think it's like, you know, one of the things is a lot of the time, probably 50% of those people, they would never say it to somebody's face. And then you have the other 50% where it's like, you know, like what you just said, it is very real, and you can really let it get to you if you're not thick-skinned. But even the thickest of the skinned people, toughest people, like, you can still sit there and it hurts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because people can just get on there and type whatever they want.
Yeah.
Regardless.
And they have enough people that chime in as well. And so because of that, though, I mean, it's made me a lot tougher. It's made me more resilient. And I've always been pretty resilient anyway. You know, I deal with a lot of different types of kiddos that go through the worst types of things in the world, and I'm able to help them. And I think that the empathy component to me, and the, you know, I have compassion and the empathy, it really makes you, though, be someone who you might not have used to be, but you are now. Like, it's, you're more sympathetic to people, and you watch how you say things and when you say them, you become a victim of, you know, words hurt, and they do every day.
But as I've always thought to myself, you know, I wonder if these, I would like, well, I, let me be careful with what I say. If the people that do it to other people, you know what I mean? Like get online and bully others and talk crap and all that kind of stuff. I wonder how they would feel if they had just a taste of their own medicine.
Oh, you know, man. I think we've all been there in regards to, you know, hey, I can give you a list of folks, you know, but I'm never going to, you know, publicly announce that list, you know,
right.
It's just in my own little brain, but I've also, what it taught
like,
me.
Let the internet drag you through the mud, and let's see how you feel. If it tastes the same, you wouldn't do it to anybody else. Like,
well,
that, you know?
those kind of folks typically just say, well, I don't care what people think. Well, guess what? I do. If you had that impasse component to your own soul, you would also care what others thought of you. To say that you don't care what people think, I think it's just such a commercialized saying that people, you know, say just to make them seem, you know, make themselves seem tough. But I think
I know. I agree. 110.
I mean, I always cared. I always, always cared what my wife thought of me. I always thought what she said. You know, I always, you know, everything that she said mattered to me, you know? And I never wanted to, like, disappoint her. And so, and I'm that way with my friends, too. You know, I'm a pleaser. I'm a giver. And there's a bad side to that. There's a negative side to that, a downside. So...
Yeah, people can, it leaves you open to be taken advantage of a lot of times.
You betcha. It opens the door for misinterpretation too, with intent. You know, that's why, like, on Facebook, like, I don't have a problem talking about, things that are going on that may not be so good, or maybe giving a perspective to the world that is my own, and maybe it's not the norm, but maybe it's a different one that, you know, folks can listen to and say, oh, I never thought of it like that, you know?
Right.
But there's always that group of people who think that, you know, well, you know, you're just saying that, or, you know, you don't mean it, or, you know what I mean? It's just that whole social media part, because I mean, there are a lot of folks that know me on Facebook, tons of them. And to be honest, I really don't know a whole lot of people in all reality. I'm like that, that popular introvert that person that, like, because when I go to the, you know, big barrel races that I announce, or my own barrel races that I announce or whatever, you know, I'll be behind the mic in a closed room, closed off to the world. And so I don't really get to go and chit chat with people and da da da. And so a lot of folks know who I am, but I don't know who they are at all, you know? And that those are the downsides to being that kind of person.
Well, social media doesn't have any context. That's probably one of the biggest things too, because I was having a conversation with somebody else about it the other day. You know, somebody could say something on social media in one frame, like in one type of emotion, and for some reason it can be taken in a completely different context than it's actually intended to, you know, because I've actually had people before, they're like, I thought you meant this way, and I'm sitting here like laughing and smiling, not nowhere near the way that they thought it was. So,
well, you bring up a really good point. You bring up a very, very good point. I mean, that's just like text messaging. It's a whole thing with, I mean, you can say the words, but it's that tone, volume, cadence that really, truly matter with words. You know, it's like words really don't truly mean anything unless you use the, you know, tone, volume, cadence in which they're intended for, you know, and it's on Facebook or even text messaging, or, you know, it's, you don't really know how someone means something. It could just be a mere innocent question, you know, and then the person who reads it as they're being condescending, or they're being, you know, accusatory or passive aggressive, or, well, no, I was just really asking a question. And had you heard my words, you would have taken it different. And that's a negative thing with society, you know, and text messaging. And
it's hard. It's really changed the way I think we all communicate. Like, just like talking on the phone now, like talking on the phone is considered an old school ordeal now.
Oh,
Whereas when I was younger and working, like, you know, I used to bartend at a lot of places and stuff, like just working in general with face to face in the public and stuff, you know, you didn't have like as much drama back then as you do now.
No. I tell you one thing, there is, if people would pick up a phone and have a 2-minute conversation on the phone versus a 3-hour conversation through text messaging or Facebook chat or whatever, the world would have all its problems solved, you know, not really, but you know what I mean? It would save a lot. Oh my Lord. If people would pick up the phone, I'm a phone talker. I like to talk on the phone. I don't like to type. I mean, I dated, it's a little funny thing. After I was divorced, I was probably divorced a whole year before I even accepted the idea of anyone saying,
that's impressive.
Hey, it was an entire year. That's good for you.
On a side note, good for you. That's really tough, because a lot of people go straight to a rebound.
Oh God, that's one thing. And I couldn't. And I was the one that filed for divorce. And so I went an entire year, but I never talked to nobody. I never messaged any girl. I never went out on a date. I never did anything for a whole year. And after that year, I met those, and nothing serious, don't misunderstand me. Like, there was a few gals, you know, I went on dates with and stuff. And so this one old gal, she would text me all day long, text me. And I'm like, I'm not used to this at all. Because first of all, my wife, I met my wife before MySpace was even online. Like, it was, we barely had dial-up when I met my wife. And so,
These are AOL days.
I remember when I first got my very first Nokia, and I was on my mother-in-law's plan, and she chewed my ass out for text messaging my ex-wife a few times, and it cost like $14 to text message. And so, I mean, so that's how old school I am in regards to that.
Right.
But this old gal, she would text me all day long, and my ex-wife was not like that. She was not a texter. If she needed something, it was, I'll ask him when I get home kind of thing. It wasn't but she would text me all day long. I'd read a text message and I'm like, I'll just pick up the phone and call her and answer it if I'm driving or whatever. She wouldn't pick up the damn phone. And then she would Facebook message me. And I'm like, you just got through text messaging me. Now you're Facebook messaging me. And I'm like, oh my God, pick a lane. And it was just the whole thing. And then twice a week she'd pick the phone up and we'd actually have a human conversation. And I'm like, this is not dating. I don't know what y'all call dating, but this is not what I'm used to. Dating for me was, hey, let's go back road. Let's go to the, you know, let's do something fun. Let's
or just hang
something.
Out, like get to know each other.
Yeah.
Don't even consider it anything. Just get to know. It's like, but I'm glad you just, I just literally had a conversation with a good friend of mine. He's a good guy friend of mine. He's in a great relationship, you know, and I was talking to him about it because I'm not even going to tell you how long I've been single because I've been single for 6 years, probably 7 years now.
Isn't it great?
Yeah, no, I'm serious because I guess maybe you get comfortable. You know what I mean? Like, you just get comfortable with your own life, and you're like, I don't have time for this bullshit.
You know what? I'll tell you what it is. You get comfortable. You get comfortable not being rejected every day. You get comfortable not being disappointed in people because we're imperfect.
Oh, God, he's going deep. He's going into some deep stuff.
We get comfortable learning to love ourselves, which we may not have ever done before. And we get comfortable doing those things. And anybody new, you know, that whole new, no new people, you know, saying anybody new just disrupts all that progress. You know, some folks our age, but just choose not to go there because it's just too much of a task. You know,
it is. No. You are absolutely 110% correct. And also the whole, like what you said, you know, it's like, once you hit a certain age, when you're younger, you've got more, I don't want to say leeway, but you've got more time is probably the better answer. You've got more time to, like, get to know people and have friends and hang out and do all that kind of stuff. Because I wasn't married young. You were married kind of young, right? Like 19, I mean.
Well, I mean, I was married at 25, but, you know, we were together 5 years before we married. And so, I mean, we were dating, you know, 5 years before we got married, and so it was a whole thing. And so, I mean, might as well have been married.
Right.
And so,
but it's different now. It's different. It's just different.
It is way different. It is. The people I've met don't want to talk to you. Hey, Blake, they don't want to talk to you.
You are absolutely right.
They don't want to talk to you. But guess what? One day a week, they damn sure want you to buy your dinner or their dinner, you know? And so
that's rude.
But let's just
really that me. Happens to you.
Oh God. Oh, welcome to being a dude. But it you know, they want to text all week
I
long.
I could not do that. No. There's no way I could do that.
And I'm just one of those people who, you know, we said it earlier in the conversation about, you know, no the whole rebound thing and da da da. You know, I've got a brother like that. I won't go into that. That's a whole other show. But I will not do that. That's not how I was. That's not my personality. You know, when I was 19 years old, when I met my ex-wife, you know, I meant it. Like I was there for the long haul, you know, nearly 20 years, you know. And so when you're there that long, I mean, I think there's two different types of folks. You know, there's those kind of people who really don't care anything about dating. And then there's people who cannot be alone. And so they're constantly rebounding off something new. And, you know, and something
and newer. They just call the tale of a trail of problems with everybody, because like what you just said, you know, you have very, very few rebound cases that are actually successful and everything's good. It's very few, but like nobody actually takes the time to want to look at themselves. Because my biggest thing with relationships, and probably all relationships, business, friends, romantic, it's like nobody wants to look at what they did wrong. It's always the other person's fault. It's always like, well, they did this and they did that and I'm perfect. Okay, right. Well, no, you're not. It takes two to fight. It takes two to not, you know, get along or whatever. And it's like nobody wants to take the time to work on themselves.
Yeah, they do not want people. Well, it goes back to the whole thing of I am too damn afraid to feel anything. Therefore, yeah. I can't analyze my own self. But I can feel what you're feeling. I mean, you know, I know what you need to do. But I'm too afraid to feel for myself. So I can't feel long enough to know what feelings I need to feel, because once you feel something, over time you learn to understand it. And with understanding comes, you know, a whole level of growth that you never knew before. Once you understand something, you're able to evolve past it if you let yourself, you know. It's all about thinking patterns, you know, and changing your thinking patterns and the way you think about something. And in order to change, you know, a life, you have to change the way you think. And that's where it boils down to. And people are too afraid to feel. And you can't do anything after, unless you feel. I mean, you just can't.
Because
you got to know what you're working with. You got to know what you're working with, you know?
Yeah.
So there's that, but I will tell you, I mean, I will never, I mean, I shouldn't say the word never. Never is a very dangerous word, but I
don't feel bad. I've done it before, too. They're like, no, hold on. Let me take that back.
I have spent, you know, and I'm not your norm, you know, just like, you know, and I think it has a lot to do with my career and dealing with different people. And it doesn't make me better. It just makes me different than a lot of people. But it, I have a different way of looking at life and people and situations. And so it comes from a lot of, you know, bad situations and bad experiences. And so I had to finally learn from all of them if I wanted to be better. And so, but I've gotten to the point now where, you know, I've spent my entire life, literally my entire life, trying to please people, because that's just my personality type, you know, trying to please people. And please, myself was never even an option. You know, who cares if I please myself? Everyone in the room's happy. You know, that makes me happy. You think it does, but then you find out later on down the road it really doesn't. But I've spent my whole life doing that. And so being alone for the very first time in my life, you know, it is so... It's rewarding in so many ways, and it's rewarding, but it took a lot of hard days and a lot of crummy days to get to this point of, you know, I'm learning to be happy on purpose, you know, and I think that's very important. You know, I was interviewing a girl, for a different thing. It was a high school kid, and I was doing an article. I had an article published. It was called Finding Purpose in a Selfie-Driven World is what it was entitled. It was in a barrel racing magazine. But I interviewed this, and I talked to this girl, and she had the best response as to, I asked her, how do you define success? And most people you talk to define success, you know, as they align it to a career or a family or an achievement of some sort, you know, something tangible. But she just knocked me out of my chair. She said, success is to be happy every day, not all day, but every day.
Right.
And so I was like, well, what do you mean by that? I'm like, what do you, like, because you're not going to be happy all day long every day. You know, this is not a fairy tale. But she said, to find happiness each single day that she lives, maybe not all day long she's not happy, but each day she finds something to be happy about. And to her, that was
gratitude.
And it was, and this was a kiddo that had been through a lot of trauma, a lot of situations. And so to find happiness, you know, in a world that's gone wrong, you know, that was her definition of success. And I think it was that moment that I realized, like, maybe we've all got it all wrong, folks. Like, you know, our jobs and what we do, putting on barrel races and making people happy, you know, we define success as doing these things, you know, like these fraternity trainers and these, you know, rodeo folks who, you know, they put all this stuff on Facebook and they praise in themselves and they pat their own backs. And it's just like constant, like, oh my God, how many times are you going to pat yourself on the back for winning another race or doing this or that? I mean, you know, and it's that mentality, and they put the tangibles and their own talent to defining success. And I think success is so much more than that. And I think that's why there's so many unhappy people in the world, because they don't think the way that kid thought.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Because you get a lot
of at it.
Yeah, I mean, well, you've got society. People get real caught up in, it's easy to get caught up in, you know, the basic things, like you said, family, money, career, and all that kind of stuff. And
those are great things to be happy about. Those are great successes, you know.
They are, but some are basic, simple things, like just being grateful for the things that you do. Because I had an old boss, and she's still a very, very good friend of mine now. I actually saw her on New Year's. And I'll never forget it. She said, everybody should do somebody else's job at least once, or live their life or put their shoes on for at least once. And then I think other people would be, because, you know, there's always going to be somebody out there who's worse than you or better than you, no matter where you go. Okay. So, you know, if you get a taste of somebody else's happiness that is less than what you are bitching and complaining about or whatever, you know, maybe it'll humble you, you know, maybe you'll be a little more grateful for what you've got. Because, you know, society puts a lot of pressure on people to be this level, do this thing, have this, have that, or whatever, and then that's the form of happiness. Well, no, it's not. It's a choice.
The one thing that Facebook, that there should be this saying at the top of Facebook every time you log on, you know, this statement, you know, of like, unless you read this statement, you can't go further, you know, go further. But there should be this thing. What Facebook doesn't understand, what people in general don't, a lot of young people don't understand, a lot of married people, and I'll have to throw out the married people, you know, a lot of married people, and I was one of those persons at one time, married people who have never gone through the things that we've gone through necessarily, you know, is there are two things that people don't look at or consider. And that's one. One is trauma and tragedy is not biased. That is a fact.
Absolutely true.
It affects everybody. Rich, poor, ugly, fat, skinny, it don't matter. You know, dumb, stupid. I mean, educate, it don't matter. Tragedy affects everyone. It is not biased. The number two thing is that people need to understand, they need to learn that everyone you see in this walk of life, everyone you meet in this life is not in the same phase of life that you're in right now. And so we're all in different phases. We might be the same age, but we're not walking the same walk. We're not in the same phase. We've not gone through the same experiences, you know. And, you know, and our experiences is what, you know, influences our behaviors. And so that's the thing that a lot of young people don't realize, and a lot of married people who've been married, you know, for 20 years happily and da da da, you know, they have the picket fences and stuff, and then they see this divorced person sitting at the bar drinking their sorrows away and da da da, and then they judge them for it. And well, guess what, bro? You might be me in a year, you know, or,
right,
you know, that young person who sees this, you know, well successful, you know, horse trainer or businessman driving a nice car, and they're driving an old clunker, but they're 22 years old and they're just, you know, starting life out, and they compare themselves to this other person, and they're saying, I want those things, and why don't I have it? Well, guess what? You're not in the same phase of life that that person's in currently right now, in this moment. And that's what people really got to understand, is that, you know, my happy day may be your dark day, and it may all change tomorrow. And so we all have to be cognitive of the fact that we're all in different phases of life each and every day. And Facebook doesn't take those things into consideration. When we see people's happy posts, you know, we don't think that, well, guess what? Last year, they may have had a gun in their mouth. We don't know those things. And so, you know, we got to all be aware of those things. And that's what I try to, you know, teach, you know, young people. And I wish more people would be open about those things.
Yeah, I think it's hard because you don't want to be judged. I mean, like what you just, going back to what you just said, how people are like, well, you know, I don't care what people think. Yeah, you do. 99.9% of everybody walking this earth cares about what everybody else thinks. But it's more a matter of, like, you know, what am I trying to get at? It's more a matter of you're scared to want to talk about certain things or put it out there for other people. Not because you care what other people think, but more or less you don't want to leave yourself vulnerable up to an attack or to be judged or to have to deal with those emotions that come with being vulnerable
and
like that.
It's like a good
analogy.
Am
I making sense?
You bet you are. It goes back. It's a good analogy. A good analogy would be the kid, you know, who may not be cognitively, you know, able as other kids in the classroom or in their, you know, circle or da da, but they would rather be known as defiant, being the bad kid in the room, versus the stupid one in the room. I would rather be known as being the bad kid who just didn't want to do it. And I said, no, I'm not doing that. That's stupid. Versus I don't want to do it because I'm too afraid to ask questions, or I'm too afraid that people will think I'm stupid because I don't know something that they might know. And so I would rather be known as the bad kid versus the dumb kid. And so it goes, that's adults too. And there's a whole adult version to that. Whereas, you know, I would rather just be known as that adult who's like, I don't give two shits what you think about me, versus the, I'm going through a really rough time and I need some freaking help.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah. And there are a lot of men like that. There are a lot of men like that in this world who are that way. And that's unfortunate. And it is the way it is, though.
I've actually dealt with more women that are like that than I have men.
I'm not going to say nothing about. But my ex-wife was. I always thought she was much tougher than me. You know, she was so tough and strong emotionally. She had so much emotional resilience, and she was just, you know, nothing fazed her, nothing affected her, nothing caused her to, you know, to panic or fail at something. You know, she was just so strong and tough, you know, and I'm like, God, I really want to be like that. You know, here I am, you know, like, telling her how I feel every day, you know, and she's like, give it a rest, you know? But I mean, women are really, really good at masking their behaviors and their feelings. And, you know, they're a lot better than men at doing those kind of things. I feel, you know, I think women are in general a lot tougher than men are, but,
I specifically had them, like, to me, I agree with what you're saying. I would be hurting. I would not be able to deal with myself if I knew that I was the cause of somebody else's heartache or agony, like online, and like, you know, like, you're not going to catch me you're not going to see me on social media, like bullying people online and talking crap about people and doing all that kind of stuff like that, because I had it done to me. And that's what I'm getting at. You know, yeah. I would be devastated if I knew that I was the reason that somebody wanted to end their life, or that somebody, you know, was having, like, y'all think this is okay to do this to somebody?
Yeah. Negative attention gets way, way more hits than positive attention.
But I'm just sitting here to myself, thinking to myself, okay.
Yeah. And
I mean, I'm glad I can handle it. I mean, I'm okay. I can handle it, but I don't know how I would feel if I made somebody else feel the way that they made me feel or tried to make me feel.
So your a lot of your greatest level of professional, you know, most successful professionals aren't going to say anything negative about anybody online. They know better. And
right.
They're not going to be that person because they know people look at them differently. But I've hurt people's feelings before. I've said some mean things. I think we all have. You know, I think We're all imperfect for a reason, you know, because, you know, it gives us something to be better for each day if we're imperfect, you know. And But I've done that. You know, I've never, to my knowledge, humiliated or made someone sad on Facebook necessarily. But, you know, I think we've all hurt people's feelings and said some raw things to folks that we may have meant or not meant, but I don't know.
Yeah, but there's a difference between maliciously doing it and not intentionally meaning to do it. You know?
Good faith. It goes back to the whole topic. In good faith, you know, from the beginning, you know, I didn't mean to do what I did, you know.
Right. Yeah.
But there is that, and I think it goes back to what I was saying in the very beginning of our conversation. You know, we're kind of wrapping around now, I think, where goes back to like what I was talking about with my sponsors. You know, of the race that I have, the people that I've chosen to surround myself with, who make me better just because they're near me and they talk to me and they want me to be better and they see me, maybe I'll say something or do something or whatever it may be. And like Blake, you know, they call me, they provide accountability for myself, you know, and they mean it in a good way, not maliciously, and they do it privately. And I think that's the main thing, is they do it privately. And like Tammy Rokas and Jamie Wilson, and even like, you know, Dee Dee Jordan and Missy Piper, and these are just the people that I can think of in my head, Laura Schumann, who bring accountability to my life that, you know, if I were all alone, I probably wouldn't do for myself, you know.
Yeah.
They call me out on my stuff. I think my friend Tammy Seamus is the best at calling me out on my, when I'm wrong, I'm wrong, and she lets me know it, but she's never wrong about why I'm wrong, you know. I'm like, damn it,
Tammy, people like that in your life.
I hate it when you're telling me the truth, but but they're good for me. They're not bad for me. I think my friend Dee Dee Crump is one of my, like, she calls me out on everything I do that's wrong, but she's not wrong about it. You know, she's right, and she's making me a better person, you know, in real time every time she does. But I think we all have those kind of people, and we should, at least, I think, that we surround ourselves.
Well, I mean, you have to have them. Like, you have to have, I would rather have somebody who can tell me to my face, hey, you screwed up. Hey, this ain't right. Hey, let's fix this. Instead of somebody that you can't trust an ass kisser, especially in business and all.
Grace, you know, it goes back to grace. And most of my friends are, most of them at least, you know, are married and have kids or, you know, and then the other half of my friends are just like me, you know. Yeah. Just trying to, you know, just single and living alone and divorced or, you know, no kids and trying to make it. But
we're outcasts. Don't feel bad. I don't know
if we're an outcast anymore. I think, you know, like I said earlier, I've got tons of friends right now going through a divorce, and, you know, they may not want to talk about it, but they're still going through it. And I think we've hit this point in our society where, you know, it's so easy to give up on something before, you know, and it's just so easy to just be alone. And I think that's where we're headed for me. I never wanted, you know, I had visions in my head of like dying with her at the, you know, at the end of our life, you know, gray and old and ugly and doing it together. And I had these whole plans, you know, but no, it was never in the cards, but they're the cards I've got now. So you got to learn from them. And I've known people, I mean, who've been married 4 or 5 times, you know, and I'm like, how can you do this? I'm 2 years in and I'm still, you know, trying to, you know, pick the pieces, you know, and I'm like, how do you do it so often? How do you divorce so often? I just don't get it. How can you put all your energy into something and then it just all go away and then you put your energy into something else the same way? And it's like, did those people ever truly put all their energy into something once? I don't know.
Yeah.
True. You know, but that's them. That's why we're all different. That's the beauty of it. But
you're right. I mean, it's really quick. It's easy to... they've made it easier to want to give up instead of to actually want to try, you know, because what was that saying? The more expensive the wedding, the quicker the divorce, or...
What was
it? It's like people actually do weddings just to get the attention, to spend the money. It's not like they actually care.
Oh, gosh. No.
You know what I mean? Like there's a saying. There was like a saying. Somebody said it. The more expensive the wedding, the quicker the divorce or something like that. Because you hear a lot of these marriages that last like years and years and years and years and years. They didn't. They like eloped or they just went and spent maybe like a couple... 300. I mean, like my grandparents, for one, they are the only two people that each other married. They were married their entire lives.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And there was no big wedding. There was no big nothing like that. Everybody actually told them they would never work. And they were married their entire lives.
Well,
that don't happen now.
Not often. There are, you know, there are a lot of people out there still, you know, giving in a whirl, you know, our age, but, I wish them the best. Maybe they got it all figured out.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay. We'll get it figured out one way, shape, or form.
I'm enjoying dating myself though right now. So,
and that's what it is.
I mean, yep. So, yeah.
I feel you. I'm right there with you, buddy. Trust me. I completely agree, because not only is it scary, but it's too complicated, and it's just like, you know.
It's something you don't just wake up one day and say, you know what, I'm done. Enough of this. You know, I mean, not me at least, you know. You don't just wake up one day and just say, oh, I want to get a divorce. And I want to really go through a really rough go at it, too, and have a really crummy next year. You know, I don't think we all wake up and do that. I think, I like to hope not, at least.
Yeah.
But.
No, usually it's something that leads up. You know, it's a multitude of things and things like that. Mine, luckily, knock on wood, was not messy. It was not any of that type of stuff. I have that, you know, most respect for him. I don't say anything bad about him at all. I don't have anything bad to say. Nobody cheated on anybody. There was nothing like that. You know, it was just, we're not going down the same path. And what do we do about it?
Two hearts collide and they need to go, you know, and I mean, most people, you know, I mean, cause you know, most people that I talk to, you know, they all believe, you know, hey, you know, Blake got left in the dumper, you know, and no, I didn't, but in the same regard, you know, I kind of look at it as I did what she wasn't brave enough to do. So I, you know, I felt like I needed to be the man and the bad guy to do it so she wouldn't have to, you know.
I can understand.
Yeah, so there's that, but I absolutely, I think she's amazing and she's best human I've ever met in my life. So, anyway.
Well, I have
to get to my barrel race.
Pretty quick. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
I think we've had a great talk. I hope I mean, I hope people, you know, listen to it and you know, get a comical relief from the two of us, maybe.
Or, yeah.